And although they still are determined that they still want certain things, which they don't feel they have received quite quickly enough, I think they have had explained to them sufficiently that they have hope they'll get them in the future. This, I understand, is what General Kahn told the committee in Bamako when he visited there last Thursday.
Why would you have paid the forces of lieutenant who burned Safar?
U.S. special forces are in Bone Safar today. But be careful, don't let that down. They're closing the camp because it was not in the proper place. And at least I understand the camp will be closed.
What will happen with the strike force?
We are consulting with General Cole in another camp at a better place.
Using the same personnel?
Using the same personnel.
What do we know about the origin of this? What went on at the camp on, say, Thursday and Friday? How have we traced it back?
To whom are you addressing that question?
To
any of us.
The question is yours, whoever.
We don't know. We don't know the origin of it.
The Americans who were there, did they notice anything strange going on Friday and Saturday? Were you in getting reports or anything?
Not a thing, gentlemen.
How do you see no reports?
Well, and no one at the Corps headquarters, so there was no unusual activity that. Well, how did it get going?
Late Saturday night when they cut the communications off.
But obviously they had sent messengers and couriers from camp to camp and organized and planned their operation, and at a given time, perhaps, probably at a given time, they launched it. It didn't work very well, as you know. And in many places, the rather were discouraged from carrying going forward with their plans. Kind of fear, as a matter of fact.
What is the American understanding in general of the total number of Vietnamese casualties, and what was the breakdown of the casualties, the number of Vietnamese who were killed in the camps?
I just don't know. I think you have to ask the Vietnamese. There are people killed at Bumi Gai, Bone Safar, and at Three Frontiers at Tugo. At one place, I think there were 13, another 16, and so many at 2 years, but I'm not precisely sure of my figures on this.
Were all of these Vietnamese special forces people?
No, at 2 years, they were not. They were popular forces, popular forces at camp there.
SDC?
The former SDC, now called Popular Forces, the Niat Quan.
Have any bodies been found?
Yes, the bodies were kept in Bone Safar.
Do we know where Ibrahim was on, say, Friday or Saturday?
Friday or Saturday?
Before
it started. You know where he was when it started.
He was in town Sunday morning.
He was in
town. I saw him last time I saw him was about 20 minutes to 12.
On Sunday morning?
Sunday morning.
This is when the troops were starting to come in.
Matter of fact, he was down talking to the troops at the radio station when I was down there also.
He was
normal. Well, this was a mounted guard. But talking to him, I gather he was trying to get them to go back. This was the impression given to us. He then returned home for lunch. He was to have lunch with Mr. Beechner, and that's the last that anybody...
Did he have lunch?
Nope, he never kept the appointment.
But do you feel, is it the feeling now in looking back that he was the mastermind of this?
I honestly do not know.
You don't know?
We honestly do not know. He could be, and he could very well have been used by other people. But in as much as we don't know who the other people are, it's pretty hard to support. We don't either one of those hypotheses. You can't prove it.
Well, but in other words, how are we going to, what are we watching for to make sure this doesn't happen again?
We're watching for the coming and going of people who are important, but frankly, it's extremely difficult if you don't speak Rabbi, July, or Saddam, or anything else to know. You're talking about an intelligence operation, really.
But then that means, Donald, that this whole special forces thing and wanting our country may have to be disbanded.
There are no such plans.
But have you said that you felt that some of the demands that the Rade made to be met by the Vietnamese, I believe one of the principal demands was that they not have Vietnamese officers. Do you think that that's wise to be?
Well, I can tell you that they have already appointed Ivan Rade officers at four of the camps. This is a fact. How many are there total?
Yes.
In the Ivan?
Well, I've been talking to the four kids.
Camp commanders have been put in.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, last night, no, this morning, Major Yaba, who is up to now the senior Rade officer in the Ivan, was promoted to lieutenant colonel.
Oh, Yaba.
Yaba. And what was the major's name, Captain?
So,
not sure of the spelling, but the Montagnard Affairs officer at 2nd Corps, who was a captain, is now a major. So now there's one lieutenant colonel, one major, and then quite a few captains and lieutenants.
Promotion.
Yes.
Promotion after the rebellion?
What?
Promotion after the rebellion?
Promotion this morning.
Yeah, he said promotion after the rebellion.
I understood the question. I said this morning.
General, were the grievances of the Rade exclusively grievances concerning their own tribe, their own affairs, or have they any bearing on the national situation?
To my knowledge, the ones that I saw were things that February 1, change of government, as John was saying, the reasonable assumption that these have been fairly extensively fulfilled. I'm sorry, I missed the performance of that.
The Vietnamese general simply been in camp, and of course, what did they do?
Well, I would say that they displayed the most magnificent restraint and patience and understanding from the beginning to the end. They were determined not to spill any blood, not to aggravate or exacerbate the situation, and to solve it by peaceful means. They were puzzled, as we all were, because of the problem of the prisoners. And thanks to the performance of the gentleman on my right, that problem was removed.
What was the name of General Lam?
General Lam is the division commander of the 23rd Division, who and the Darlock and Kronbrook province happened to be in his division tactical area. He commands all the troops there.
Did you ever trace back this leaflet which was handed out the first day, speaking about the American imperialists and their Seat Hill War block?
No, but the wording was strangely familiar, wasn't it?
Yes. But do we know anything more about
no.
it?
No.
Can you link that with Ibrahim in any way? Or
no.
Do you know?
No, it was promulgated, so to speak, by that front for the liberation or whatever, the press people. It said that on it.
Yeah.
But, whether they're interested or not, or who even they are, I don't know.
Do you ever heard of them?
No, this was a new organization.
Was that handed out in town, in Badminton, on Sunday?
I understand it was, isn't that right?
Yes, sir. Do you want me to say that?
Please.
About a quarter to 12, somebody was, I was standing on the highway near the radio station. Three Jeeps with CIDG forces in it. And our friend, who I later found out is the Chum, Winsor Cow, and a small panel truck, a type used by Salvo for their Salvo operations, came racing down the highway, I'd say 60 to 80 miles an hour, extremely fast. I couldn't believe what I was looking at when they flew by me. They dashed into town, and of course, this is the group that handed out the leaflets. And it's also the same group that went by Hebron's house, and we don't know if he was forcibly removed or not voluntarily, but they went to his house and picked him up.
You saw him in their company then?
No. No, they just passed me in the highway, but this was the group that took Ibrahim out of town. They then immediately made another dash right back out the highway and disappeared. Shortly after that, about 15 minutes later, I haven't been put out the word to stop any of the CIDG forces coming into town. The reason there was some hesitancy with this group is that they had Captain Darnell with them as a hostage. So I think they used him as a safe pass, you might say.
This is a special forces
officer that was in the Binsor Park camp.
And was, then he went back to the
camp? And he was supposed to return with me, yes. He had no choice.
With you, so you...
Well, this was the first day.
You were in the camp together.
Colonel got there the second day. There was a slight difference in that.
I brought the convoy back from Boone Bay, and he was already in camp when I arrived.
Did you know who the, when you were in the camp, did you know who the individual persons were who had been in those jeeps?
Colonel didn't see the jeeps.
Well, but was the captain able to identify them?
Well, I would think that he did. However, this had nothing to do with the part of the operation in which I was involved, and as a matter of fact, it was of no interest to me during that period of that week.
I never
pursued that particular point.
Well, I trust we are now. Can you give us the full name of Captain Dugan?
We can get it.
What? He was a chemical man?
He was the...
No, 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 he was the Special Reserve Attachment Commander, U.S.
General, as far as you understand this attempt at rebellion, do you think they seriously thought that they could take and hold an area of the plateau with the forces from 5 camp?
Well, that would be very incredible, wouldn't it? They couldn't obviously do it. Whether they thought they could do it or not, I don't know what was in their minds.
Is there any sign that they counted on other forces, perhaps, that didn't come out and join them?
They may very well have, but we don't know about it. We know of no other camps that were involved in this particular plan. But there may have been other camps, there may have been other plans. We don't know. No evidence.
How about a sign that perhaps they were just doing it on a 1 or 2 day basis to make a point and then retire and somehow got out of town? Is there any...
I wouldn't care to speculate on that because I have no basis to, on which to do it.
Gentlemen, his friends were distributing the leaflets, and I presume that they were engaged with the Viet Cong for that type of leaflet. And they were back in the camp, is that correct?
Yes, the Cong was there throughout the whole period.
And they were also seen distributing the leaflets.
Isn't that what you said, Ben?
That's right. This is from Captain Darnell.
What was the role of the channel of moving the content?
It was quite confusing in the camp also.
Not a military.
Because he was certainly not a military man, and the few times that I saw him carrying a weapon, he carried it in a very unusual manner and seemed to be rather afraid of carrying it.
Was it like you were there?
No, he was there from the very first. As a matter of fact, he was in the convoy from Boone McGurry up to Boone Sapa.
Was he among the camp personnel?
I asked people who had been in the camp before whether he was. They said no, but I can't tell from any personal knowledge. Well, he was a member of the personnel for the entire period I was there.
Where is he now, sir?
A very good question. I can't answer it.
No, no.
Well, you know, was he
I would say he was in his 20s.
And you were
there? Yes.
For these people who passed out the literature and held the hostage and did all these things, were they strangers to the camp?
No. The senior man we referred to before was a member of the camp complement. And, yes, and however, as I mentioned, during the period of the week that I was there, he had more influence on the situation than did the battalion commander.
And what was the address, therefore, that this camp was infiltrated?
By whom?
By the VC.
Well, if you assume the VC were behind this thing.
But no, the very fact that these tracks were pretty undefined tracks, and that they were distributed by people who were in the camp, normally in the camp, so one might normally assume that they'd been.
You could. Agents. Could be true, certainly. And
do you think there are other camps that are infiltrated the same way?
I don't know. If you assume that this movement is infiltrated by the VC, and it could well be, it could have been used by the VC. One of the tracts looked like a tract that was written by a Montagnard patriot. The other tract seemed to be written by a VC, both signed by the same committee. Maybe there are two factions. Maybe there's one set of leadership that's the rather national movement, and then within that, maybe a smaller infiltration of VC and the normal pattern of VC operations. The only thing we can't say is that this is the case, because we haven't identified anybody as a VC. Of all the people, the Cham is the most suspicious type. He was an outsider, the only non-ethnic robber in the camp, and he seemed to be more interested in the political than in the military aspects. That's about as far as we can go, if I'm not mistaken, Fritz. Absolutely.
Well, we have people in all these camps. Yes, you said there was no indication that this thing was going to happen.
None whatsoever.
What degree of surveillance does an American advisory group have on the comings and goings of the camp, of the head count at any given time, who people belong to? To what degree is it possible?
This is not the role of the Americans in the camp. The Americans are in the camp not to command the camp, but to support the Vietnamese special forces who do command the camp. It's up to them to count heads, and it's up to them to control people going in and out of the camp. The American special forces don't have that role or mission.
Well, on the question that other camps, and we've had examples this year, and non-polychron and so on, where there's been ethnic problems and so on, where it would be to the interest, naturally, of the American people to know who was there, who was doing what. Just wondering, assuming the language barrier and so on, how close a tab can be kept?
We look to the Vietnamese counterparts to take care of that.
Well, it hasn't been particularly successful then, has it?
I should say that there have been some holes in it.
I mean, once there was any person, whether in this was a group of the chiefs that found the common support at the dissolvents in the town of Baton Rouge.
You asked me how many?
Yes, would it be a group of 10 or 5 or 8?
Well, this is difficult because we are a small people, and when you look at a jeep going 60 to 80 miles an hour in front of you, as a matter of fact, three of them, it looks like 10 or 12 in the back of each one of them because the guns are sticking out from all directions. But I took no head count, believe me.
I'll tell you now.
Three jeeps in the panel cup.
And you say there was one American captain was with them.
He was kept in the panel truck.
Did they, three Jeeps and a panel truck. Did they hand out other leaflets in addition to this one?
I do not know because I didn't see the handing out of the leaflets. This
which
was,
language you went
in? French. French, I think, in Rite Aid.
Those incursions into the town, how long did this last altogether? How
very, very quick. I'd say within a half hour, they were in and out.
Within a half hour?
But they certainly were after the Ottoman clamped down on their way around the town.
Well, has the captain given any sort of report on how this little motorcade got started? And
well, to whom?
Well,
have you been debriefed by
Yeah. Did that shed any light on the problem of who was behind it or how it got started?
Well, the whole camp seemed to be, at that point in time, organized to with a mission to do certain things. So. My impression, although I wasn't there, but you can correct me, Bob, if I'm wrong, was that all the rather officials, officers, and non-commissioned officers, acting officers, non-commissioned officers, were doing certain missions. And there wasn't any one or two people who seemed to be the culprits. It was just everybody was proceeding about the business of what looked like a plan.
Well, what did the captain think when he was when he got in the panel truck to ride into town? What did he think he was doing?
He thought he was being taken for a ride.
Well, he was disarmed, and whatever that had in arms, I wouldn't say he had a gun out of his back, but he had no opportunity to leave. And he didn't really want to leave because he had men back in that camp, and he was putting their life in jeopardy if he attempted to escape.
So he went back to that camp, remained there through the remaining days of his life.
No.
No, he was there for the first 2 days, and then he had to return to Bangalore to accomplish certain coordination for us. And returned again on Sunday, just after the release of the prisoner.
What made you make your move to release the prisoner at the time you did? Was it pressure from the Vietnamese or a feeling that you could do it, you could do it now?
Well, it was instructions from me to Colonel Fine. Obviously, the thing couldn't drag on forever. The Vietnamese had been, and still were, I would say incredibly patient, considering where this thing started, and asked us to get the release of the prisoners, because Colonel Fine was there to request it. He did request it, I don't know how many times, Fritz, but daily or several times a day, pointing out why they should do it along the lines that he discussed here. It finally became obvious that the government couldn't tolerate an armed insurrection indefinitely. And if some of the government officials became impatient, I sympathize with that impatience and understand it fully. And it seemed that it was worth this try, which fortunately, owing to the fact that Colonel Fenn by that time had achieved a psychological dominance in the camp, had a good chance of succeeding. Colonel Fenn agreed that it did and did it.
Have we fixed the time of day of this release?
Yes, it was about 11 o'clock, shortly after 11 o'clock on Sunday the 27th.
And what time did the Americans leave the camp?
They left the camp at 8:25 Monday morning.
And do I understand you went in at that point to help them
out? I didn't help.
No, I mean, you went in.
When I arrived there, you talking about Sunday or are you talking about Monday?
Monday. When the Americans were pulled out, you were in the choppers that went in to get
we called Colonel Friend and asked him if he could withdraw he talked to the rebel leaders and told them that the usefulness there, that he'd been instructed by his higher headquarters to come out, that he'd been trying to get the leaders out for a week and had not succeeded. The time had come that he had to go, and he expected to go, and was going to go. When the aircraft arrived at the helicopter pad, the Special Forces Detachment was waiting there to be loaded up, with the exception of Captain Darnell and one other man who were back in the camp. Colonel Fern came out to the helicopter, and he and I and some others walked into the camp, and Captain Darnell picked up his radio, and the sergeant with him came down. We talked to the rebel leaders for a few moments, so we left Major Rabah, who came with us, and a civilian whose name I don't know, a little man, or in civilian clothes, a representative of the province. They stayed to talk. We said goodbye, walked down to the helicopters, took off, and returned the banner to it.
How long were the helicopters on the ground?
About 15 minutes.
Was the helicopter landing spot quite close to the camp?
Yes, it's right by the gates. Within the nearest helicopter was 20 yards from the gate.
What time, this the Sunday prior, the motorcade went into town, is that right?
That's right.
What time Sunday was?
The motorcade itself? About at 12, I guess about a quarter to 12.
Were there quite a few people on the street?
Normal amount for Sunday morning, yes.
Caused quite a stir among the people?
Not appreciably. Mm-hmm. I don't think those people in the streets knew what was happening.
Well, I mean, that was a car when the armored battalion moved in yesterday.
No, they were all gone.
One other a gruesome question. Do you know whether all of the Vietnamese prisoners were shot or some of them dismembered? Was there evidence of atrocity other than shooting?
I can't answer that. I saw where the prisoners were buried. They have since been exhumed. I can't tell you anything about it. No one talked about this particular phase while I was there.
Because
I do not know. This is not a subject that anyone was in a mood to discuss during the period of time I was in the camp.
Do you have a feeling, sir, that the Montagnards felt somewhat betrayed in this whole thing, or how did they take to the Americans leaving?
Of course, their reaction was one that we can't really assess very well at the moment. Let us say that it seemed to me that they were very appreciative of our efforts, and I'm certain we would be very welcome if we wanted to return. This was my own personal feeling. I'm certain of this, and I feel at the moment, particularly in view of the way the incident ended, that they are happy it ended that way. I think that many of them are sighing a sigh of relief at the moment, and I know that by now they are ready to go back into operation again.
A question to the General. This repatriation of the Americans, this might well have misfired. In that event, what were you prepared to do? You had three choppers on the ground.
We didn't have to cross that bridge.
Well, could we just get you made with crossing that bridge? If it is
arisen? I would prefer not to discuss that. That problem didn't arise. We had armed helicopters with as we always do, to protect the troop-carrying helicopters. We expected that we might run into VC. As a matter of fact, I I thought from the beginning that the landing and takeoff of helicopters constantly at that exposed field might at some point involve some VC action, and I saw to it that we had armed helicopters available in adequate numbers each time.
Is it correct, General, that all that week, from Sunday to Sunday, that there shows a noticeable lack or drop in VC incidents in that area?
Well, I know there were many VC incidents in that area, and I would say that although there weren't any, that this may or may not be significant. There aren't very many VC around there.
Why do you have so many state reports as camp?
It's why we're moving the camp.
Over there, Beverly, it's really easy to get rid of the last question there. We'll see if we'll take one more.
In summation, though, General, you know, to the poor American reading public that has to unscramble all this, did you say...
You mean it's not
credible? You take the thing, and just superficially, if we have to boil it down to 150 words, we had about 2,000 men on the American payroll who rebelled against the government.
We have 2,000 American men?
No, we have 2,000 men on the American payroll. We pay the special forces.
No, no, we don't. Well, we pay, no, my friend, we do not pay the Vietnamese pay.
We give the money to the Vietnamese camp commander, he in turn pays.
We give the government of Vietnam guns, weapons, bulgur wheat, and a number of things. We also give them money, and they in turn pay the CIDG troops.
How many CIDG work have you had all together on all Vietnam?
Oh, mountain around about 9,000.
9,000.
All over the plateau.
Yeah, all the way up to the 17th parallel. From Tailing up to the 17th parallel.
Well, thank you very much, General, for taking the time here to do this. I'm sure that all of the press will appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And our patrons here.
Actually,
the figure of 115
was very, very high.
It was high
for this particular size.
It was more than that high. That is a high figure. And I wouldn't, I don't know, I'd hazard a guess that probably at least half of them, half of this number will probably show up in subsequent days and weeks.
So I'd like to say observations on a broad basis on the present progress of the war, and if you wouldn't say anything about new policies, new ideas now coming along, which may shorten it.
Assuming that stable political base can be established, which we're hopeful for, I think that the military forces of this country are quite capable of pursuing successfully this counterinsurgency campaign. As I view the armed forces of South Vietnam, and I have intimate association with them, they're a reasonably solid structure with discipline and morale and spirit, and quite well led. Leadership, of course, goes across the spectrum. Some leadership is of the highest order, and of course, it falls off, and as is the case in any military organization, to some that is marginal. I have been impressed, however, with General Khan's desires and efforts try to install in key positions experienced, competent, and reliable leaders. I've been impressed by the military competence of many of these. In fact, I would say most of those commanding the larger units. training of the armed forces is generally satisfactory. There are a few units that I would consider not combat ready at this time. Some of the strengths in some of the units is low at this present time, but I expect this situation to correct itself within the next several months. This low ebb in strength is a reflection of the static situation that existed within the government of Vietnam from November to really mid-spring, where the machinery of government broke down, the administrative and fiscal machinery. And this resulted in very few recruits. In fact, they even stopped volunteers coming in. But they continued to discharge those who had finished their service. So these factors, coupled with casualties that were incurred, resulted in a rundown of strength. And that there was really no input, but only output. The situation has changed, and the strength of the units is now on the upswing. I don't believe there are any real fancy ideas that can be applied to winning this particular conflict. Certainly, we should, and we intend, those of us involved in this, the countries involved, including certainly fundamentally the armed forces of Vietnam. I think we need to get a yes in high command, and the military structure, because they're the ones fighting the war, but those of us who are assisting, supporting, advising. Must continue to use, test and proven methods and fundamentals. Appreciate it's going to be a long, hard process. A counterinsurgency campaign is more of a problem of management of resources, really, than a military campaign in the classical sense. The military is only one facet of this complex. Equally as important is the psychological facet and the economic facet. It takes an integration of military forces and means, and psychological means and methods, and economic assistance in order to bring about a pacified area. I think a great deal has been learned in the past years, and everybody has come to realize that it's an integration of these non-military needs and methods, coupled with the security provided by the military forces that will bring about the end product. To the pacified area. And this has been broadly recognized, learned from experience, and also learned from the experience of the British and the Malayans. And I have had the pleasure of visiting Kuala Lumpur and Bill Kim and a great number of Vietnamese officials that visited there. So those officials responsible for pursuing this action are aware of the methods that have been used elsewhere and the benefit of local experience. And I believe that the present outlook it is favorable. external pressures that have been brought to bear, to complicate the situation. It's important that the authorities in this country keep their eye on our own pacification. Certainly, external factors have to be considered. But cannot be given emphasis to the point where energy and resources and attention toward pacification operations are allowed to suffer. Now, I've generally answered your question. I'd be glad to spell out any part of this if you're interested.
Yes, well, among the things that obviously have in mind is the possibility of carrying a war into North Vietnam by air strikes or by a combination of air and ground or by other permutations of the military forces.
Well, of course, certainly we cannot rule out the expansion of this conflict. Recently, we've had a confrontation, which we're all aware of. I would say to the extent to which the conflict is going to expand, and the nature of military actions and reactions pretty much lies in the hands of the North Vietnamese. They may provoke the last instant, and they may provoke others. And certainly it's to our national interest, which has been made very clear, to be prepared to react accordingly. I think this is pretty much peripheral to the internal problem, but certainly related. Dissipated and not concentrated in in those areas that have been given security attention by the military. This has been alleged, and I'm not sure that there are cases where this has been done. It is not being done at the present time, except by accident. Yusong and Mike D are working very, very closely together to ensure that these economic props and this support in the agricultural area is not dissipated, but is focused on those areas where we are trying to build up a high level of security, which we hope to follow. Programs that will serve to demonstrate to the people the interest that the government has in them, and which will make their life perceptibly better than the low present under BC control. I would say Magdi is very conscious of this, and so is Yusong. I think we now have procedures and organizational arrangements and integrated programs to avoid dissipating their goods and services.
Yeah, but this is a change of policy, because when you sum
I don't think it's a change in policy as much as it's an improvement in method of operating.
As you said before, management.
As I said before, this whole operation is more of a problem of management than a problem of military tactics.
Is it also a problem of politics? So I've just been rereading Marshall Birmingham Jobs' book, which always makes good reading when I come out here. And go back again to his outline of the inter-China war and some refinements in the tactics. But, this stressing constantly the fact that anyone who regarded the military operation as being an end in itself was done as an error, and that it could only be regarded as a means of achieving political ends. Now, I am too much signed. I've been back here, and I lived here for 2 years. I haven't seen much sign since I've been back. That the strength of the communists at the crucial level, the least is split between military and political, but I have seen plenty of signs that even at the level higher than that, that's breaking down by the district level, which is more higher than from this country. There doesn't seem to be a real political purpose in the administration. I mean, what are you telling the people? What are you giving them apart from military action at that level to combat the communist whole front propaganda, cobbling of minority groups, 100 different faces in 100 different villages. Where are the political overtones of this, classical job style?
Well, I certainly agree with your thesis that political factors are fundamental to this whole situation. Tactics of the DC. I mean, terrorism and guerrillas were the agents for that political machinery. By the same token, the military forces here must provide the essential role of providing security to protect the people from the harassment of the military elements in D.C. And in other words, is to give the peasant the first need in man, which is security. And then following this, a political groundwork and a better economic base should be laid. Now, when I refer to the psychological facet of this complex, I included the political and sociological factors. Was part of a broad psychological area which has to be dealt with. It's pretty difficult to have a firm psychological base if you do not have a firmly established central government. And we've been plagued with some instability. But hopefully this is becoming stabilized. The leadership of Joe Kahn, I'm confident that it will. Once security has been achieved in a relative sense, well, certainly strong efforts must be taken in order to orient the population toward the cause of the government, which means that they have to know what the government stands for, what the government expects to do to them, and what the rights of the government, etc., which is a political action. Some of these political actions must be carried out by military men at this stage. There are, of course, many cadres being trained, work in order to provide for this function. I'll answer your question in summary by a statement that I think is a very keen appreciation of the importance of this factor, not only in the GBN, but also in the advisory ranks.
Speak of the government as a unit, sir. Well, do you think
I'm speaking of the administration.
Yes.
The leadership of Joe Kahn.
Yeah. I think it's so difficult to evaluate what one's told in this country.
Pardon me again?
It's so difficult to evaluate what one's told by various different Vietnamese factions in this country. But
well, really make an appraisal of the situation by observing and listening from the sidebar. Rumors are rampant. So
many people have bones to pick. Facts do get distorted and exaggerated. When you go into the countryside, I'm sure you have, I get an entirely different attitude from the officials working in that area who have their tails up, a little optimistic, well, morale, and so who seem, by and large, to be approaching their job in a very intelligent fashion. Poor country of Guangdong. staff consisting of Montagnard officials. The province chief is a Vietnamese, but his attitude in Montagnard and social and political problems are not quite enlightened. Exactly surprised, but I was heartened. And I find the situation exists on a broad base.
Mr. Harper and Mr. Starr were with us on Monday when we went down to Bob Lou. Told about the 21st Division oil
fund. There are some problems there. Cambodia to the Vietnamese, there's quite a lot of Cambodian population there.
Villages.
Up to quite recently, certainly in May, General Khan and indeed in Washington, it was said several times that this problem, which you explained, existed, but that there was no particular need for any more American military strength to be brought here, that there is enough. Advisors Khan said this himself, and it was said, I think, by Mr. McNamara in May, if memory serves me right. When did this situation change, and what caused the decision for the rather large increases in American advisors which are due to come out of this country during the course of the next few months?
Mr. McNamara visited here from time to time, and needless to say, the purpose of his visits was to raise the situation as he sees it at the time. He talked to various officials, made public visits, and he passed the judgment. That statement was made back in March. As a matter of fact, he's visited me twice since I've been here, and every time he's been here, we have asked him for certain help, which he has granted. There's been some increase after every visit. I don't recall the statement that we had all we needed to do the job. I don't know what that.
Well,
I am aware of the 65 estimate.
Generally, it's my first visit back here for something over 3 years, and it seems to me that in that time the pressure and power of the Viet Cong has increased tremendously, that the American presence has undoubtedly become much more obvious, and sort of on a par with the Viet Cong increase, and only the government forces have diminished. The extent of control seems to have diminished.
Control of
the countryside.
Well, I don't know what your baseline is. I think without any question, the last couple of years, this conflict has become more intense. I mean, the army has put more into it, and the government has put more into it, and those that are supporting.
South Vietnamese have put more into it in the conflict in the way of resources. Not only the Americans, but the Australians. And now we've seen many other countries providing support for various forms of personnel, equipment, goods, and services. So I think the intensity of the conflict is definitely increased. This has manifested itself and built up side. However, as far as the government forces are concerned, they have not yet hit their full program strength that was programmed some time ago, some year ago. They've been on the bill. They started with a number of divisions which have been expanded, their squadrons which have been expanded. The armed forces of Vietnam are still on the rise. Their state training, their operational skill has, I think, continued to improve. Say, by the same token, the VC skill has also become somewhat greater. So I think your observation is well taken that the conflict has intensified.
It was pointed out to them in the briefing about the other day that within the 21st Division, they have only one battalion that's gone through the National Training Center program. They've had some in-house type of training to bring them up to acceptable degree of operational readiness, but they still have to go through the national training cycle. This was pointed out, you remember, down in the 21st Division.
Yeah.
There are some divisions, all the battalions have gone through. But as the general said, they still haven't reached the peak of the efficiency which we can expect of them.
They haven't reached the program force level, nor have they reached the training levels, nor have they received all the equipment.
Just one minor point here. Has this our Vietnamese government ceased demobilization since the declaration of state of emergency?
Have they ceased
to demobilize
Arvin's
people since the state of emergency has been declared?
I'm not aware of any.
I'm not sure. I just wanted to know.
Yes.
I don't know. But
you mean the people who are scheduled to go out?
You mean on the Vietnamese side?
Yes.
There was a return.
Yeah, there have been some discharges, yes. During the period of the doldrums, as I referred to earlier, there were those that had finished their time of service were discharged. This has been suspended for the time being, although there's still compassionate discharge to this time. I mean, I think their personal policy and memories are both fair.
Have they new recruiting programs scheduled?
Oh, yes, there's a matter of fact, the recruiting program is going better than they expected, and their recruiting quotas are being oversubscribed in some cases. Now, the conscription program has lagged, but the recruiting program is doing quite well.